For she is a sinner. And Jesus answered him, and Simon, he says, I have somewhat to say to thee. And he says, oh, Master, say on. And then he says, there was a certain creditor who had two debtors. One of them owed him 50 mints, and the other 50. And when they had nothing with which to pay, he frankly forgave them both. Now therefore, tell me, which of them loved him the most? So Simon answered, and he said, well, I suppose that he to whom he forgave them. And he said to him, well, he says, thou hast rightly judged. And he turned to the woman, and he said unto Simon, and he says, seest thou this woman? I entered into the house, thou gavest me no water for my feet. She washed my hair with her head, and with her tears she wiped it with the hairs of her head. Thou gavest me no goods to kiss. The woman has not ceased. That from the time that I came in, ceased to kiss my feet. My head with oil, thou did not anoint. But this woman anointed my feet with oil. Therefore I say unto thee, her sins, which are many, are forgiven. For she loved much, to whom little is given and forgiven, saying, loveth little. And, you know, in this story, as we've watched this thing, they set the scene a little bit here, what's going on. Is that back in this era, and in this culture, the Jewish culture, they didn't have, civic, places of government, seat of government, or the spiritual places in the synagogue. The town priest, and whoever was head of the synagogue, was essentially equivalent to what we would call a mayor. And they didn't have these public houses. You didn't go to the office, and here's the mayor's office down in that building. They had these large homes, and people would come there for judgment or opinion or whatever it was to be resolved. And that was the role, essentially, of the town priest of the region. And also with them is that it was also somewhat of a political role as well, primarily a spiritual one. And that was to cast all sorts of judgments. But there was something there that, as their customs have always kind of been, when somebody of a certain fame or of note came, they were recognized. Just like maybe, I don't know who the mayor is of Honolulu or the city or where they come from, maybe. But if the governor of the state of Hawaii comes to a city, even though they may be a different party, they don't agree with them, they're in the complete opposite end of the poll, they will still welcome, the governor to town, Mr. Governor, or Mr. Governor, thank you so much for blessing our town, coming here. It's a key to the city. The city council will have a day of acknowledge them for the role that they have, even though they don't agree with anything. It's just part of the political posture and gesture and acknowledgement. And that's essentially what went on within them. Jesus was very famous and quite a follower. And so here, now Jesus comes to town and he does, what kind of a mayor would do. He tells him, come on, have a meal. Not because he agreed or anything, but he actually, it's just kind of like everybody else, looking for a reason and an opportunity to do it that may come up. And whoever could bring Jesus down, that would be, boy, that would never be something famous for them. They were looking at, the Pharisees and Sadducees and said, you're all, what are we doing? He's a problem, he didn't fit. But here, so whoever could have, bring that down. So anyway, he invites them all. And then as they're having a meal, they have a meeting. This woman who finds out Jesus is there, she comes, she brings a box of alabaster oil in her gospel. And she just comes and brings this. And she is just there, we don't know her past with Jesus, what it was, but obviously it was incredible. Something had happened within her heart, towards the Lord, that she just was absolutely as grateful as anybody could imagine. And she comes and she responds with this gratitude and with this affection. And as she comes in, the next thing you know, she's weeping. She's just overcome. She's there right around. And then she's tearing, crying. So much so she's taking her tears, wiping his feet with her tears, taking her hair, and trying it with this. She takes the oil, and she's putting this ointment on. And she is just overcome. Now, these are all things that in that culture, the custom. Anybody that invited somebody over, you did all of these things. it was just natural. You know, they are in that culture. If you're invited in that day and era, you invited somebody to your house, right at the doorway, you had water. And either you or if you had servants of your own, the servants would wash your feet. You've been out, your feet are digging, it's got sweaty, your flip flops, or you know, whatever, and they're dry and crusty. And boy, they would dig off your shoe, they would wash your feet. It was just incredible. It was just, oh, thank you. It's like giving somebody your cup of tea. Let me refresh. And that's just how, and then you welcomed them, you gave them a kiss. And that culture, kiss one side of the face, kiss the other, and you gave them. You kiss them and welcome them into you. Then you would also have some ointment. You would have some sort of oil by the door. Then they had been out and they balanced it in sun or whatever. They're baked, they're crusty, skin is dry. And you would take this and you'd rub, you know, just, here's some lotion, rub it in, and empty. I mean, it was just a custom. It's just how they lived. And what this woman did was just, she just saw an opportunity that what he should have done, he wasn't doing it, and she jumped on up to that. And she's just overcome. And so she finds herself as an opportunity, and she's pouring out this affection. Now, as this has happened, the Pharisee, who didn't do any of these things, he sees with her. All of a sudden, he's there, no doubt, looking for any opportunity to bring him down, and this woman supplies an opportunity beyond his imagination. He's just thrilled. He just got Jesus served right in front of him on a silver platter. He looks there and he's thinking within himself, ha, if this man were a prophet, everybody's going out and saying, he would know who and what manner of woman this is. For she is a sinner. And she's touching him. And he's allowing all of this. And everybody else, they had done him. He's probably sitting there trying to think how he can bring Jesus down. He's given this. He's thinking, ha, everybody, I hope everybody's seeing what's going on. What's happening here? And Jesus draws attention to him. He said, you know, he okay, let's make that the focal point. And it says, and Jesus answered. He answered. Here he's just thinking it. Jesus answered his thoughts. The Bible says about Jesus, he gave himself to no man, for he knew the hearts of all men. He knows exactly what this guy's thinking. He sees the trap. He sees the whole thing. He's away at it. And he sees all of this as just simply a, he says, as a tremendous opportunity to show his love. To show his love, his mercy, his forgiveness, what he was all about, what he came for. Those that are whole, I don't need a position, but those that are sinners. They accuse him, come out all his sinners, and why favor things that you mentioned. That's exactly why I'm here. That is exactly what I do, what I'm all about. And you know, here another thing that is so powerful about this whole story is that we see Jesus that way. One of the greatest advantages when Jesus came to the world is that the world saw a dimension of God that it had never seen before. There was nothing new of what it was, but they saw love incarnate, which they couldn't, which man had never seen before. Man, he saw love clothed in human flesh. They saw it in a whole new dimension. God was able to reveal himself in a whole new way to the world. There was nothing new about God's love. There was nothing no more powerful about it. And that changed. It now just became, you know, an animal. It gave human flesh. You could see it. All of a sudden, it had a voice, it had a reflection on his face. You could see it in his face with compassion. You could see as he looked at people that he loved and he cared. You could see him as he singled out. Always seemed to find the guy that had been the longest, the woman that had been possessed the most, the one that had been by the pool for the longest, there waiting, hoping to be healed. The one that had the greatest sin within him. He seemed to always gravitate in the crowd to that person because in that, everybody else that didn't have the depth personal experience, so they would think of the sin of that person. If he found that person, he could gather all the rest as well. So strategic in revealing his love. You get that person, and that person sees you love the rest of your life. Maybe he loves me too. Maybe I said, and it was so wonderful. So here Jesus, he's about this. And you know, one of the things that's tragic is that we don't see people in that. You know, maybe to some degree we do, but most of us, you've got a job or whatever, and you've got something. And, you know, it's funny, I live in a neighborhood, I've lived in the neighborhood for, well, don't know much about, we got to know a couple of our neighbors were in the group of COVID. When that came, that actually, when things shut down, all of a sudden neighbors are out walking, they're talking with their dogs and hanging, how are you? And it was really kind of an opportunity to get to know neighbors, talk to them. They knew I was a Christian, they were a pastor most of them. I ran another way, can I pray for you? What's going on? And we had a tremendous opportunity to talk because they can't do it for us at the time. But at the same time, we really, you know, most of us, you get in the car, by the time you pull out to the stop sign on the street, and you make a turn, you don't know anybody. You're passing all these cars, you go to the grocery store, you don't know anybody. You walk in the bank, you don't know. You just kind of, maybe you recognize a person here or there, you know, you got a name, maybe you can find one, so then you go, wherever it is. We are just so wrapped up in people, we don't see anything anymore. One time I was in New York and I was taken out, you know, David Wilkerson, if you remember that name, was across the Swift Place from us around years ago. There's these two buildings, and it takes us there. They both house 30,000 people. They were government housing projects. And in these projects, I can't remember how many stories high, but every four floors was just people, residents, and every fifth floor, and it was all of them. Government offices, there were schools, there was dentists, there was doctors, there was grocery stores, everything that's in a town. They had a police department inside it. They had 30,000 people that lived in each one of these buildings. 30,000. I, you know, grew up in a town of 30,000 people. But here in one building, everything basically, they said, you need from birth to death is in them. Rather than if you're sent to prison, they take you out. But in that, even a judge, if something there to handle and put you decide next step. But everything, you can live there and have your clothes done, do your banking, go to school, raise your family. So the sad thing is every door has at least two to three locks on it. Because there's about 1,000 people that live per floor. And they don't even know the people on the floor, let alone anybody else. Something there that you just see, you crowd people in. And the next thing you know, you don't see anybody. And then with technology, today you come home at the end of the day, you turn on your TV, you're sitting there, you know, eating your dinner, having your salad, eating your beef, burger, or whatever you're eating. You turn on the TV, and they're downtown. You know, fire downtown, and I caught a house fire, two children died in the fire, whatever, and you're watching that, and then it goes, oh, hey, over here's what happened today. Going on and whatever it is, and you see just while you're watching it, all sorts of death and destruction and heartache and pain. That's all they seem to want to talk about. The good news, they don't really have much to say on that. But you just look at all that while you're just sitting there eating. You can't think about it. You can't be serious about it. If you can't take it in, you would just be weeping. You would just be crying on each one if you could. If you could take it in and you could absorb it, because we can't do it. But when Jesus came, he saw everything. He saw every man. He looked at you all, being a crowd. He knew the heart of every man. And he could walk down a street, and next thing you know, he stops. He says, hey, who touched me? He says, what do you mean? Who touched you? Somebody touched me, I perceived the virtue of power went out of me. Who was it? He said, everybody touched me. Anytime. And then a woman steps in. It was me. She had an issue of blood for 12 years, and she spent all her money on doctors and everything, and extra course. But she's unclean, so she can't leave the house. You can't go down the street. You've got to approach the town and say, unclean, unclean. So people stay away, because if they get near you, then they are now unclean. They can't go to the synagogue until they go through the cleansing process. So you lose all your friends. You can't go to the synagogue. You can't work. You can't hang out. And she spends everything, 12 lonely years, until everything is gone. She had nothing left. Finally, out of desperation, she just thinks, if I can somehow or another, if I can just touch Jesus. A violation of the law. She goes through a crowd, doesn't shout, touches all sorts of people. And there Jesus comes by, she just grabs his garments, goes by. All of a sudden, she's healed. And then Jesus comes.
through judgment.
Did he want to bring her down? Did he say, you're a violator of the law, you're an unclean woman?
No, he had a servant.
He looked at her.
She said,
I know, you know, there with that, I mean, on how he cared. I went out and he just wanted everybody to know. Imagine all these people that touched Jesus all their life, but they never touched him one day. They never touched him. I need help. I need you to heal. I need my marriage. I need my home. I need my life. That we need something to grab onto to get from it. And so often, how many of us have spent so many years so close to him? We worship him. We sing him. We lift our hands. We bring our children. We bring our family. We just go to church. He's right there. And how we really need him. I've got to touch him. I need the help. I need the help in my life. Jesus is not a doctrine that is to be discussed. He's not a theology. He's human. In the most wonderful sense of the word, that he's somebody that ought to be upon us, but he's somebody that dwelt upon us to be filled here. And when he came, he could touch me. It was this glory. Now when he was a body, he had this glorious opportunity to communicate on a level that he, as the creator of the world, he never had. He could now look as a human being into somebody's eyes. He can smile and can realize he cares. They can look at him before he said a word. And they can recognize him. And you watch him. I mean, here was something, a new and deeper way that God is experiencing. And Jesus did some amazing things I'll never figure out. I mean, I don't know whether when he became human, he watched people just spit all the time. But it tells us Jesus would come along and heal somebody, spat on the ground, make clay to spit, and put a stop. He healed him anyway. Big clay of it, put a little bit of money there, put it in his eyes. He was always omnipotent. He was always omnipresent. He was always omniscient. He knew everything. He was everywhere. He had all power, but he didn't have a body to exhibit. And now he's got this place where he can now see everybody, you know, at their level. And they can see him. And you know, and that's what he did. Fellow named Blake, the poet. He once says, this life's dim windows of the soul distorts the heaven from pole to pole. It leads you to believe a lie when you see with and not through the eye. He said again, think about it. This life's dim windows of the soul distorts the heavens from pole to pole and leads you to believe a lie when you see with and not through the eye. We can simply with our eye, we can just look. We just saw a rich man, poor man, beggar, you know, candlestick maker. You know, we just see images, we see reputations, we see somebody there on the outside. And this life's dim windows of the soul distorts the heavens with. But when you merely see with the eye, and I look there and I see one after another. I put it, oh, that's this week, because that's what we look at. We see a race. I wonder what they do. I wonder if they're rich. I wonder if they're poor. Rich man, poor man, beggar man, thief, you know, or whatever. We categorize somebody, we make it, and we get this human impression. Merely by seeing with the eye. But we don't see through. This life did windows of the soul. God gave this eye that it could reach, not just reach there to the brain and make an intellectual opinion. Should go down and reach into the soul. Where our eye has the capacity to look and see something. See a human being. See their heartache, see their suffering, see their struggles. And it's a dim window of the soul where it distorts that from pole to pole when we barely see with the eye. And it doesn't go with the ears. And here with Jesus, everything happens. And here, as he comes, and he's brought to this man's house, this Pharisee Western down. And this woman comes in, and he's near everybody in town. Everybody looking, they all were. No doubt everybody in town sitting around seeing this, they're wondering, whoa, what is going on? Should Jesus be letting this woman do this, you know, to her? What's going on here? And then the Pharisee, he just jumps all over. He's capitalizing on this. I just want them. You know, and then Jesus, he says, all right, let's talk about this. And he said, you know, Simon, I have somewhat to say to thee. Oh, Master, speak up. He said, you know, chit chat. Whatever you want to talk about, let's just keep doing what you're doing. Let her do what it is. How are you? And he says, you know, there are these two brothers. One only 50 minutes, the other only 500. Well, neither had anything with this. And he forgave them. Now remember, he's answering them. This Jesus, he fought within himself, this man. So Jesus is specifically answering what this Pharisee thought. And he says, this guy, he had two debtors that could. And he says, well, they had nothing. He says, for he forgave them both. He says, which one loved you the most? And then the Pharisee meets very sick. Well, I suppose. In other words, based on the information you're giving, the natural supposition would probably be, I may need more information. I'm not going to get caught. I suppose the one he forgave them. And he says, I was right. That's not a trick question. But then it says Jesus turns to the woman. Now he looks, makes her the focal point of everything. Turns to her. And he says to Simon, while he's looking at him, Simon, seest thou this woman? And of course, most of Jesus' questions like this, they were rhetorical. There was something there. No, you don't. The answer, he asked the question because it was already known. You don't. The answer is no. What we're going to do. Do you see this woman? And, you know, again, like all we see is the superficial. We merely see doctor, you know, lawyer, man, woman, businessman, politician, whatever. We just see an image. We just see what, you know, that superficial thing that is not the being at all. One time in the past, I was doing a couples conference actually in Palm Springs. And the pastor took us out to lunch for between sessions for the afternoon. And he took us to a restaurant in town. And we went in, there's like three or four couples, and we're sitting around this table, Ryan, sitting there. But there's some sort of weird thing going on. The restaurant, you know, what in the world is this? What's going on here? Everybody's trying to do something. And the waitress, you know, I said to her, she, what's going on? What's happening? And she's got her little thing there to write down her order. She said, well, don't look down. Go right behind you. John told her. He's in town, building. And he's here having lunch. And so I lean over and I look. It's John DeBolton. He's there. I said to the waitress, I said, would you do me a favor? She said, yes. I said, no, I said to everybody, it is John. John is here. And I said to her, would you do me a favor? She said, yeah. I said, would you, if she said, I said, would you please don't tell anybody I'm here. Call it a quiet lunch. Please don't tell anybody. She saw me. Thank you. For the rest of our lunch, she is sitting. And when they go to their little station with their plates and everything is, you know, that's a new test. They're always, everybody, all the waiters, they're laying down, who is that? Trying to think, who is that? Everybody at the table is watching this. It was hilarious. So for about an hour of my life, I was somebody. I thought. But on how, you know, this superficial world, that is not John Travolta. That is some guy stuck in a body, you call that, who has the same issues and struggles that his life, who has found an image on the surface that now allows him to pretend to be somebody. And everybody else goes for it. But I don't know, anybody that knows that. And here, you know, when we find ourselves looking, he says, do you see this woman? The answer was obviously, no, you don't. No, you don't. And he says, let me tell you a little about this woman. Because I see this woman. Since I came into your house, all the things you should have done to show any natural custom of welcoming a guest in here, you didn't do any. You didn't show any concern, any care, or whatever. But this woman, she had to see kissing my. She didn't give me a kiss. You didn't wash my feet. She washed. You didn't give me any oil. She gave you. And this woman, he says, though she is missing, I know know exactly who this was. Jesus there, he could look at this woman, and he knew her story perfect. He knew her before the foundation of the world. He knew the story. She came into a world and wondered about what, how old it was, where it was, who her mother and father was, or whatever it was. He watched her grow up because he saw her maybe go out, care for a boy, and the boy took advantage of her. She thinking he's serious and he cares for me. She gives herself to him. He dropped her like nothing. Another man comes along and the guy here, and they're saying, oh, she's now somebody. Hey, she's cheap. She's nothing. She's trash. And that's his use here and there. And I hear this woman now, she's the only way she can make a living. She's a prostitute. She sells herself. You know, you don't care. You don't need about her. I know everything about her. I know the emptiness. I know how what she's been through. I know her life. I know. And he says, and he who is forgiven much, loves much. Oh, she's been forgiven a lot. Yes, she is. But she loves. And the question, I just have a kind of a very simple question. All of this is asking one question. I'm not asking you to go see your neighbor 5 doors down. I'm not asking you to know the banker. I'm not asking you to know, you know, the people you pass in that shopping place or the place where you buy your purse. But I think it's very fair for the Lord to you, and I would love to ask you with your wife, do you see this woman? Do you see her? So often we merely just see, what do they call it, the 3 C's? Cooking, picking, cleaning, carpooling, whatever the services they bring. We just say, hey, here's what she provides for me. Like the banker provides or somebody else. This is what she. But I think the Lord, I just would ask you with your wife, do you see her? Do you see her? You see what she goes through. You see her struggles. You see her trying to figure you out in your home and think she's terrible. Did you ever find, one of the things that's scary for a lot of women? A lot of men, I should say, not for men. You know, frankly, we don't want to. I don't want to sit. I don't mind sitting down here. It's a career, but I don't mind doing it. Usually women show, women should teach them, but I have. And I don't mind sitting down with a woman, having her sit there and talk to me about her. And I, this guy doesn't do this, and doesn't do this, and doesn't pay attention to me. But you go down a list, all the bullet points. Of what you're not. I can sit down and talk to your wife and probably come up with a lot. And I don't mind doing that. I can maybe help her get the list. Because at the same time, when the counseling over, I'm not in that tent. So I don't mind listening to your wife. I can help her put together a list of what needs to happen. But I'm not responsible for it. I'm not a husband. I just don't want to sit down with my wife. Because I get that list, and all of a sudden there's this whole honey-do list. She needs this. She needs to be listened to. She needs some time. She needs confidence. She needs this thing fixed. She wants that thing paid. She needs whatever, all this other thing. She needs the car service, whatever it may be. And all of a sudden, I do that with my wife. I got a list. I got a bunch of writing. And so we want to know as little as we have to keep going. But instead, I think the Lord would look at us as a husband. I gave her to you, and I made you her. Parallel only with my role as the head, as the husband of the bride. To love and to care for her. And now that is your role with her. Do you see the woman? Because if you don't see her, nothing will happen. And to me, what my suggestion to you, I don't know what time it is, 5 minutes or more. Like 5 minutes or so. But my is just to ask you to be ready. Do yourself a favor. Don't do me a favor. Do yourself a favor. Go see her. And take her out. Many times we take a wife out only because there's no time to cook. She didn't prepare anything. Or we have that long day. Or we did whatever else. So let's go get a wife. What it is say is, I want to take you out and I want to sit down. I want to hear you. How are we doing? How is it? It's a scary thing. God, where am I letting you down? What can I do? June 22 says, some have compassion. They need to live. The whole difference in the world, it says about Jesus having compassion on us. There's something, you look at people that is talking out all over everywhere. And all sometimes is compassion by saying, I care. And that's all they need. Now, they do need maybe that painted or the carpet or something there. But the most of it, it isn't you. You're not the solution to all this. But having you sit there and say, I want to live. And what I can do, I want to do. You want to do something there that does incredible things for your parents. Ask them. Sit down. Have the passion. You know, don't just simply, you know, let her stay the cooking, car moving, and cleaning. I think there's more.
Child care.
Child, I don't know. Whatever it is. But we're weak is the services provided. Forget the services provided. Just instead of, you know, looking there and realize I want to grow old. I want to present one day to myself a glory. Without spot or wrinkle. Jesus, he's going to one day look at his bride. He's going to look at you and me and say, oh, look at this. When he's conformed to his image, when he's done his work, when he's loved and he's cared, he's had compassion on us. Not empty. He still sees, not just with the eye, but through the eye, all the way to the soul. And he cares. He's not there to lie and beat us up, condemn us, call us anything. We know we've fallen. What man here has to fall? What man is, you know, when you really look at him, I'm not done. So what? That's obviously true of all of us. What would say Jesus say, is there a step I can take? Is there something I can do that helps me work for it one day? I can look in the eyes of that woman and realize she knows me. That she can every day when we pray. Day I go by that I'm not so grateful for her, and she and I don't mention. And together, but then she doesn't talk about, you know, that she sees the incredible label that I brought. Sorry. I'm the jerk. She's never. She's always. I still, after all this, I thought someday I'd catch up. Someday I would have her level of discernment and love and care, the kids, the grandkids. But every on her phone, she has some sort of a thing. I don't know how you do it. But it brings up a different picture every time. And somebody, bam, every time. There's some bad, somebody, oh, she's so different. Yeah, I don't know. I got one. I think I don't know. But with her, she's something, oh. You know, she just goes, oh, she's oh. And I think, why did I think, why did I just so grateful this week? But you just look and you realize I want someday, not my house, my car, my job, or her hair or a house I gave her. When I get there, she's not mad. What kind of house did she live in? What kind of car did she drive? What kind of jewelry did she have? What kind of clothes did she wear? And all that's part of it, of showing her. But you can do all that and never see. But when we look there and say, she is my greatest spiritual. It's not the stuff he's not going to ask. What did you give? He asked, what did you have? Did you love me? That's how I did. We let the Lord convict us, speak to us, none of us. But when we're being honest, we say, okay, I'm going to do a scary thing this morning. I'm going to do a very scary thing. I'm going to take her out. We're going to have a baby, but I'm going to look her in the eye. I say, what can I do? You tell me what I can do. I want it. I tell you, a lot of you guys, if I made you do that, if I could convince you, if I gave you, a lot of you guys, if I gave you the option, okay, here's the deal. You're going to do one of two. Either you, someday this week you're going to get some candy, you're going to get some flowers. And you're going to go home to your wife and say, honey, can we go out? What are the flowers, honey? So think about it. I love you. I want to change it. Now all this is upset, when you're upset, option number two. You go down to the airport and you get somebody to take you up at an airport. $10,000. And you're going to jump out of that plane with no parachute. Most of you would sit there and think about it. Jesus.